All right, so time for a sutta reading about the fifth of the indriyas, panya, or wisdom. Now, there are so many different suttas about panya. There's just hundreds to pick from. So, I felt overwhelmed. Well, which one will I pick? And I'm like, well, you know, what would be a favorite? Well, you know, just... Okay, so here's one of my favorites, and I don't think I mentioned it yet on this retreat. It's called The Reservoir, or at least that's Bhikkhu Bodhi's name for the sutta, The Reservoir. And this is Anguttara Nikaya 4.178. A lot of the suttas, no matter who translates it, you can still read a pretty good translation. But in this particular case, I say Bhikkhu Bodhi's is to my mind, the best translation. Okay. Bhikkhus, there are these four kinds of persons found existing in the world. What for? Here, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in a certain peaceful liberation of mind. Okay, so... we're not even discerning here, is it a Brahma-vihar, is it a jhana, is it full arhanship? Any old peaceful liberation of mind. So I take this to mean, you know, anything from Brahma-vihara and up, okay? Loving-kindness or higher. Could be jhanas, etc. Okay, he attends to the cessation of personal existence. As he is doing so, his mind does not launch out toward it, acquire confidence, become steady, and focus on it. This bhikkhu cannot be expected to attain the cessation of personal existence. The Pali here is Sakkaya Nirodham. Okay, so Nirodha is like cessation, and Sakkaya is like personal existence. Personal existence, or personal individual identification. Okay, the ending of that, the cessation of that. Okay, so... Alright, so as he is attending to this cessation of personal existence, his mind does not launch out toward it, acquire confidence, become steady, and focus on it. This bhikkhu cannot be expected to attain the cessation of personal existence. Suppose a man were to grab hold of a branch with his hand smeared with gum. His hand would stick to it, adhere to it, and be fastened to it. So too, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in a certain peaceful liberation of mind. And repeats it all again. He attends to the cessation of personal existence. As he's doing so, his mind does not launch out toward it, acquire confidence, become steady, and focus on it. This bhikkhu cannot be expected to attain the cessation of personal existence. Here, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in a certain peaceful liberation of mind. He attends to the cessation of personal existence. As he is doing so, his mind launches out toward it, acquires confidence, becomes steady, and focuses on it. This bhikkhu can be expected to attain the cessation of personal existence. Suppose a man were to grab hold of a branch with a clean hand. His hand would not stick to it, adhere to it, or be fastened to it. So too, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in a certain peaceful liberation of mind. He attains to the cessation of personal existence. As he is doing so, his mind launches out toward it, acquires confidence, becomes steady, and focuses on it. This bhikkhu can be expected to attain the cessation of personal existence. Here, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in a certain peaceful liberation of mind. He attends to the breaking up of ignorance. Okay, so breaking up of ignorance is avijja pabedha. Avijja is like ignorance. And this Pabeda thing is breaking, smashing, breaking through illusion. Okay. So he attends to the breaking up of ignorance. As he is doing so, his mind does not launch out toward it. Acquire confidence. Become steady and focus on it. This bhikkhu cannot be expected to attain the breaking up of ignorance. Suppose there were a reservoir many years old. A man would close off its inlets and open up its outlets, and sufficient rain would not fall. In such a case, it could not be expected that this reservoir's embankment would break. So too, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in a certain peaceful liberation of mind. As he's doing so, his mind does not launch out toward it, acquire confidence, become steady, and focus on it. This bhikkhu cannot be expected to attain the breaking up of ignorance. Here, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in a certain peaceful liberation of mind. He attends to the breaking up of ignorance. As he is doing so, his mind launches out toward it, acquires confidence, becomes steady, and focuses on it. This bhikkhu can be expected to attain the breaking up of ignorance. Suppose there were a reservoir many years old. A man would open up its inlets and close off its outlets, and sufficient rain would fall. In such a case, it could be expected that this reservoir's embankment would break. So too, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in a certain peaceful liberation of mind. He attends to the breaking up of ignorance. As he is doing so, his mind launches out toward it, acquires confidence, becomes steady, and focuses on it. This bhikkhu can be expected to attain the breaking up of ignorance. These bhikkhus are the four kinds of persons found existing in the world. Okay, so that's the sutta. And there's this nice analogy of a reservoir. So it's kind of like a big, huge tank of water. And it has inlets, so, you know, rainwater can collect into it. And then outlets, when the water is released out. And so there's a bit of a science, you know, thing here where you you open the inlets, you want to let the water in, and you close off its outlets. So to my mind, the opening of the inlets, like that's allowing in the peace from our meditation, that lets the water in the tank fill up. You know, the more we meditate, the more we attain to Brahmaviharas, jhanas, etc., and put in other kinds of, do other kinds of merit making. It's like a big reservoir full of merit. And then, now closing off the outlets, that's kind of like sense restraint, okay? When we aren't too wise with our sense restraint and we allow our, allow our minds to get attached to worldly things, that's like allowing the water in the reservoir to escape. And if we are wise about sense restraint and we're wise about meditation, eventually we just build up so much merit, the embankments of the reservoir break. And that's similar to attaining Nibbana. So I think that's a nice analogy. And I feel this is a little bit like, I read you a sutta the other day, this Urnabha Sutta from the Samyutta Nikaya, where there was a Brahmin and he talked to the Buddha and the Buddha just gave him a brief teaching, very brief, just like there's another famous wanderer as well, Bahia, only needed to hear a brief teaching. And so this Urnabha broke through to non-returner. Bahia attained to Arhat right away, very, very quickly. And now in the case of the Sunabha, the Buddha really points out how the Sunabha had really good faith. He had unshakable faith. Nobody could shake it. No god, no deva, no person, no king, no nothing. So to me, although faith is not, you know, specifically mentioned here, this language about his mind launches out toward it, acquires confidence, becomes steady, and focuses on it. That to me is faith-like language, okay? This is like confidence-like language or sadha-like language. Okay, so to my mind, we can't speak only of panya here. We can't speak of wisdom only here. Without, we can't really look at it in isolation. Without also putting on the table, you know, the need for sadha, faith, this acquiring confidence. Yeah, and I also think we also have to put on the table sense restraint as well, such that we don't lose this merit that we cultivate. Yeah, so I meet a lot of Buddhists, and they are, you know, bless their hearts. They're very motivated learners, and they have good intentions, and they oftentimes are really keen about measuring which jhana, you know, which jhana did I attain to, or, you know, how do you characterize all these jhanas or Ramviharas? Like, how do we measure this? And I want to know where I stand in this measurement, or where other people stand in this measurement. Okay, well, that's understandable. I say virtually everybody kind of starts in that place, but as the years pass, as time passes, I say there is no escape from admitting and acknowledging that at the end of the day, it's going to be faith, okay? Can you be like this Unabha Brahmin, you know, who's cannot be shaken? That has a lot to do with this too. Are you unshakable in addition to your meditation practice? Are you okay, Abhisattva? You need a drink of water. So, at the end of the day, we can't really ignore the need for faith here, and we can't ignore the need for sense restraint, I say. All the meditating in the world, no matter how good of a jhana you attain, okay? Let's say you're a highly skilled meditator, you get the fourth jhana, you get it for like 2 hours, and you're like this Arnold Schwarzenegger of samadhi, okay? You're a Chad. You're a samadhi Chad, okay? There's this term people use today, Chad. It means like big, muscly, tough guy. That's a Chad. Okay, so even if you're a samadhi Chad, that's awesome, by the way. But if your sense restraint is poor, if you don't have much sadha, you know, that awesome samadhi, it only really buys you a period of time afterwards where you are really inspired and uplifted and energized. You know, you're going to feel like Superman for, maybe like 2-3 days, 4 days would be a long time. You know, even like the best samadhi, like you're going to be all totally energized and uplifted, and yeah, it's like superhuman. You actually kind of feel like a bit godlike for the next 2-3 days. You have a bit of an afterglow, but you know, like I say, a week later, this person might be breaking sila or doing some other unwise thing. So samadhi buys you time. You know, it buys you. You know, it wins you it wins you a lot of inspiration. And it, you know, it is going to be necessary in the long run. There is an analogy of the Buddha of the frontier fortress. The frontier fortress. This is one of my favorite similes. It's in one of the suttas. And where the Buddha compares meditation practice to living in a frontier fortress, which means like, you know, think of a little town and it's got a wooden wall around it, and then there are these invaders who want to break through those walls and invade the town and steal everything and kill everybody. And the idea is to hold out the invaders and secure the fortress from the invaders. And living the holy life is a little bit like this, where you're living in a bit, you know, the monastery is a little bit like a fortress amidst normal, you know, lay life all around it. And so the Buddha compares attaining the first jhana. That's kind of like having cooking fuel, you know, like firewood that you could cook a meal with, okay? But just because you have some cooking fuel, that did not result in you getting any substantial meal there. That was just cooking fuel. That was just a start. Now, if you can attain the second jhana, that is like eating a meal consisting of only staples, okay? It's just like a plate of rice, basically. Maybe some beans on the side, some lentils. Just the staples. Okay, you can survive off of that. You can survive off of that, but it's not, you know, it's not all that satisfying. In a short-term way, okay, fine, that'd be good enough. Okay, and then the third jhana, that is comparable to a meal where all the nutritional elements are there. Okay, there's vegetables, there's fruit, there's you know, everything you need to get all the right, whatever, vitamins, minerals, nutrients, you know, it's a complete meal now. Okay, and then the fourth jhana is like that same complete meal, but it has all the spices, the gravies, the sauces, dessert on the side. It's, now it is a luxury meal. That's like, you could not ask for a better meal. It's gourmet, it's perfect. Okay? Now, you need to survive in this frontier fortress, and you need to survive, you know, by getting enough food. And the jhanas are like that food. So yeah, you can go without the jhanas for some time, I suppose. But if a monk or nun goes without them for too long, they are kind of doomed to have to run away from the fortress, which is to say, disrobe. You know, like, I'm not enjoying doing this holy life thing, you know. Yeah. So, one will become dissatisfied after too long without jhanas. Jhanas kind of keep it exciting and worthwhile and rewarding and, you know, kind of provide the zest of life that would keep you there. It's nourishing, just like food. And without it, you're going to want to leave. You will not be able to hold the fort. You will not be able to hold the fort from the invaders. Okay?
What's the sutta number?
Frontier Fortress. I don't know offhand. It's in the early Buddhist texts. Yeah. A little searching is necessary there. Okay? So maybe that's enough for now. There's only so much energy I have for talking in front of a room full of people. So don't take offense when I need to economize that time. It's like a self-care thing.